Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, what comic run would I like if I'm on a desert island? A Black Kiss, Cherry Pop-Tart.
Keep it PG, son.
No, I don't have to say why, I just... And welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the Internet, all the way from liberal Kansas, which won the election, Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Hi. You know, this show, it's going to be about a five-hour show. It's almost got to be. I mean, we got so much to talk about. I mean, we could talk about Hurricane Sandy and what it did to comic shops. We could talk about the elections and what it didn't do to comic shops. We talked about WWE, Hell in a Cell, Disney bought Star Wars, Daylight Savings Time started, Walking Dead started, Burn Notice is back. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff we could talk about. We could even talk about that writing thing you've been doing every November just to, you know, it's kind of like what did the Catholics call it when you self-flog yourself for your sins? I mean, I think it's like you doing that every year.
Well, I want to start with a special opening. It's a very special episode.
Whoa, we didn't even see that coming. Okay, hang on. I gotta pour myself some hard liquor here because I don't want to be crying. There we go.
Now, I was checking the statistics as I'm gearing up for another edition to the Solitaire Rose family of websites. One of the sites that's kind of been dormant for a year or so is going to be firing up soon. And I was looking at our stats, and you know how I've said we have 2,500 listeners.
Well, downloads. I mean, I think some of that downloads is the NSA just monitoring us, make sure we're not giving away vital government secrets.
Yeah, but they have to listen to it to know if we're doing that. So they are listeners.
If you say something like terrorist bombing airport, Michelle Obama's underwear 90. You know, that's enough to get, now we're on their look at list. But if we don't say that podcast, you know, you do the same thing in emails and phone call conversation. It just flags it. You know, if you keep saying it,
I still say they're listening.
Then you might get a knock on the door. But, you know, just look at some of those bobos who are like tweeting all the racist threats after the election, and suddenly they get a call from the Secret Service. We'd like to talk to you, sir. But that's it. This is not a political broadcast.
No.
You make your vote by buying comic books.
That's right. I think all of us, liberal, conservative, libertarian.
Libertarians. Maybe not.
Anarchist.
So. No, they download.
We can all agree on two things. We love our comic books. And the worst president in history was Lex Luthor.
Oh, I don't know. He kept the trains running on time.
Yeah, but he's the one who kind of invited an alien invasion.
Yeah, but up until then, it was good. I mean, everybody liked Nixon until that whole Watergate thing.
No, Joe. People didn't like Nixon.
People liked LBJ until he lifted the dog by the ears.
Well, there is that. So, looking at our numbers...
People like
we've
Martin
gone from 2,500
30 days.
We've gone from 2,500 to about 3,600.
What?
Right? I don't know what happened, but over the summer, we've picked up a whole bunch of listeners. So I thought it might be a good idea for us to kind of introduce ourselves to the new listeners. Hi. How you doing? Howdy. Oh, I more of a, you know, who are you, and why the hell should I listen to you talk about comic books? Joe?
I don't know.
Well, who are you? What do you do? And have you ever had any job in working with the funny books?
Oh, you're talking credentials. Oh, okay. That makes better sense.
Or a credenza. Do you have a credenza?
I usually feed them to my dog.
Well, maybe your feed the credenza kills them.
No.
The cricket. Ladies and gentlemen, those are crickets, which we stole from Wrestle Crap Radio. We tried to have a contest about 2 years ago to name the crickets, and we got zero entries. So I got to keep the prize myself.
Yes. But this podcast isn't all about Corey. It's about me. Not really. Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed on our official Crazy Comic Book podcast page and stuff, I actually posted pictures of our lovely mugs, well, from a couple of years ago at a con, just so you can actually visualize the people who are talking through these series and tubes of wires that we call the internet and sometimes satellite feeds. I was born a poor black child. No, wait a minute. That's Steve Martin's line. My first comics, I can't even remember, because the thing that really bugged me when I was a kid, and we're talking 1970s, and please don't do the math. If I saw To Be Continued,
I was told there would be no math.
I know. I don't want any math. I'm terrible at it. I feel bad now because I'm at that point in my life where I can no longer help my kids with their math. But if it said To Be Continued at the back of a comic book, I more than likely would put it back on the shelf, because I knew there was no way I would ever probably find the continuation. You know, I made exceptions. Occasionally I'd buy an action comic because the backup had Superdog in it. But it wasn't until my first comic book, Amazing Spider-Man 178, I was given by my cousin during Christmas time. In the Midwest, we called it Kris Kringle. I don't know what they call it elsewhere. It was like, instead of buying gifts for all 20 cousins, you just pick the name out of a hat and bought one for that person. He gave me four comic books, Amazing Spider-Man 178 and three Fantastic Four comics. I promptly took those three comics to Greg Ketter's first store. Greg Ketter is a man who owns Dreamhaven Books. He is friends with Neil Gaiman. So if you're ever looking for Neil Gaiman autographed books, go to his website, Dreamhaven. Google it, people, and you can probably get it from him. Greg was the first store I ever bought a regular comic book at.
And he's a damn handsome man.
He is. But he gave me like 20 cents for these three Fantastic Four, which I turned around and bought more Amazing Spider-Man. And I told him years later, Greg, you should have just told me, get the blank out of your shop. Started it. Back then you could still find, you know, you used to find three packs at Kmart. There was old drugstores going out of business. Occasionally you would find racks of comics, so I'd pick up stuff then. But basically every week I would come into his store, pick up the new Spider-Man, and, you know, branched off into Marvels and then into DCs. And then when Greg finally closed his store, he ended up moving it a couple times. I went to a store called St. Paul Comic, run by a guy, John Nunziata, who's no longer with us. And from there, I discovered Advance Comics, the Capital catalog. I picked up Comic Buyer's Guide for the first time. I pick up Pacific Comics. I mean, he would show me things, and he was obviously trying to sell them, but he'd say, well, here's a run of Mage from a comic book company called Kimiko that was pretty good. It's got this character in a Grendel, you know, so everybody wants issue number 6, you know, which is why that one's worth probably what the set is. And from there, you know, things exploded. I did realize my lifelong dream with my buddy Pat. We met in high school. We became weekend warriors. We went to comic book shows. We would buy collections together. We would, you know, sell stuff. Pat collected stuff. Probably, I think he said he started in 1972. You know, he was born in 65 like me. And so he always had more money. I mean, he lived at home with his ma. He was single. I discovered the joys of having a credit card, so I was always broke. But we would buy stuff together. We'd buy stuff for ourselves. We'd run at cons. And then in 92, we had the opportunity to buy a comic book shop. The owner of Hot Comics, I can't remember. It was just Hot Comics and Collectibles because at the time it was just one of them. He wanted to sell. He wanted to get out of the neighborhood. He didn't like the neighborhood he was in, to which Pat and I took a little bit of umbrage at because we were living in that neighborhood. We'll just buy, you know.
It's a horrible neighborhood, but I live here. Well, yeah. You know, good for you.
Good for you. But he wanted to go to the other side of town, the rich part of town. And so he outright sold the shop to me and Pat. Pat and I got a partnership agreement. Among other things, you know, because we both had our own inventory, we agreed, okay, we'll each bring in like $2,000 worth of inventory. I forget how much cash it was. I want to say like 10 grand in cash. And this is each. We agreed because I was going to quit my job at Sears and I would run the place full time. This would be my salary. We agreed like we each get so much free a month. There were other things. Oh, one of the big things that saved us is that we decided, we also put in our partnership agreement. If one or the other wanted out, what we would do to get out, because I realized, you know, Pat and I, yeah, we started with a pool of about 20 grand. And when we got the shop running, there was no way we're going to have, I would have, you know, 10 grand to give Pat out his money plus whatever, you know, business growth we had. So we figured out a payment terms, you know, and it was a thing, well, you get paid X dollars a month and then you get like $100 free credit until it's paid off. That would be whatever. So, you know, anytime you're in a partnership, that's something important to think. It doesn't work the way you expect. How are you going to get out without hard feelings? It was tough.
I feel you should always have a prenup.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was because, I mean, really, it was, you know, I'm amazed Pat and I are still friends because it wasn't like, oh, okay, it wasn't fun and joy. You know, there was a lot of some ill feeling on Pat's part. And one of these days I'll get Pat on the podcast and we'll talk with him in depth, his side of the story. Because I know there's a lot of times, Corey, you'll say stuff. Remember when this happened? No. So I'm sure. That I don't.
You remember when no, I don't remember that. Maybe I should start using that to my advantage.
Why? I don't know. I don't have anything to give you. I know you got the book of credit because, you know, eventually I'd meet people like Corey who just wanted to have one day a week to come hang at a comic store, watch wrestling, and he would work on back issues and work for credit because I always felt bad. And then, of course, by the time I close my various shops, he has that infamous book of credit just in case I win the lottery or open up another one. But that's in the future.
$1,128.
Yep. And you get
it. And Joe will not dispute it because I think as you were closing, you were like, you realize with your credit, you probably could buy the store, right?
Yeah. So I bought out Pat. We went from a 1,000 square foot shop to 3,000. Right after 9/11, I wanted out. I did a business plan. I realized with two kids, there was no way the shop was going to be able to do what I wanted it to do. I tried paperback books, you know, I tried adding lines. It just wasn't going to work the way I wanted. And oddly enough, the guy who bought the shop for me decided he wanted to expand the store. So he bought my shop and that's how I was able to get out of, at that time it was Hot Comics St. Paul. I mention this because the Hot Comics still exists as two stores, but the original owner and myself had nothing to do with them. So if you happen to hear on the podcast, you know, these bobos said this, just remember the guys who own Hot Comics, they bought it from the original owner. They had nothing to do with me because I own my shop outright. And again, I sold it back to the original owner. You know, and that comes into play because the original store that Greg Ketter had was called Twin Cities Comics. There is a Twin Cities Comics in the metropolitan area, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Has nothing to do with Greg Ketter's original shop. Corey will refer to Schinder's, which was a chain he worked at that went out of business. But then there is a couple stores in the metro called Schinder's, have nothing to do with the store that Corey worked at. So if you ever find yourself wandering through the Twin Cities area and you see these stores, definitely stop in, but don't, anything we say, don't judge them. Don't judge them. In, was it 2004? What remained of my shop went out of business and,
yes.
I tried it again, running Crazy Comics and Stuff, hence the name of the podcast. I got the store to break even. It wasn't what I wanted to do, so I closed that. So I have had experience running a big, big store. And again, I tried a little store, which was less than 5,000 square feet. Still collect comics, still sell on eBay when I'm home. Right now I'm working with a group called the National Deployment Force. What they do is they send me where I'm needed. Case in point, we're just coming off Hurricane Sandy. Lot of tragedy involved with that, but what is not known is there was a group of about 200 plus people from TSA, you know, the guys who make you take your shoes off at the airport. They volunteered to go out to help, and they went to the airports, they maintained the security at the airports while the people who lived there were able to go home and take care of their loved ones and their stuff. They helped got the airports back up, talking specifically LaGuardia, JFK. As you know, they got flooded horrendously. Their efforts, while a lot of these people went home, there are people being called up by FEMA to go out to help. My supervisor here, I'm currently in Liberal, Kansas. Google it if you care. She just got called up to go work in the FEMA's surge support. She's not working as a TSA officer. She's working as a FEMA, not really volunteer because you do get paid for it, but she left this morning to go help for 45 days. Not coming back till after I'm gone. So there's a lot of people in government trying to do a lot of good work, even though, you know, the thought to people, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you, may put fear in your soul. But the force I'm with, again, Liberal, Kansas, it's a hardworking town, blue collar. They got meatpacking here. I guess you can do some hunting.
Meatpacking.
Yeah. They didn't say any farmers were here packing fudge or anything.
And just remember, ladies and gentlemen, that we do have the sense of humor of a 12-year-old.
True, true. But for some reason, they can't get people to stay here and work, you know. So there's maybe, like I said, there were three permanent employees. One of them just got deployed. So they send me into airports to help. If you ever go to my Facebook page, I have the photos open. You'll see some of the places I've been. I spent 3 months in Las Vegas, 3 months in New York area. I went to Barrow, Alaska. Look it up, folks. Can't go farther north in America. So I'm kind of a traveling minstrel of sorts. And what's fun is I'm able to do the podcast with Corey, visit different comic stores, let you know what I think, find the exclusives. Right now I'm in hell because there are no comic stores within 100 miles of me. But we'll get to that in a minute. Corey.
Your old Uncle Rat Bastard is Corey Strode.
Thanks.
Much like Joe.
Really of bad meat or good cheese.
Much like Joe, I actually started reading comics at age 3, according to my mother. She would read me Disney books.
Coloring in Batman's eyes?
No, it was Disney and Harvey.
Oh, so you had read all that stuff.
So there was, she'd picked up a batch of Uncle Scrooge comics, and we lived out in the middle of nowhere. Joe lived in St. Paul. He's lived in cities his whole life. I lived outside a town of 200 people. For us to go to the movies at the time, we had to drive about a half hour to get to a movie theater. That's about how remote we were. Lived on a farm. I guess mom got busy with something. Dad wasn't there. And Mom said, oh, you know, just watch TV and play. And she came in a half hour later and saw that I was sitting on the couch sounding out the words in the Uncle Scrooge comic when I was 3 years old. So comics have always been there.
Interrupt here.
Yeah.
But I'm reading, as we talk, you know, I try to get stuff up on the internet. Breaking news, 4.3 magnitude earthquake strikes in eastern Kentucky. I didn't feel it. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. I kind of became a huge comic nerd when I discovered Marvel. And sometime I'll have to tell the story of how I became a Marvel fan. But I was a huge Marvel fan starting in 75. The first Marvel I picked up was Marvel's Greatest Comics number 59, which reprinted a Fantastic Four comic from around the middle of the Lee Kirby run. And that's it. I was hooked. Completely hooked.
There is somewhere a picture of you sitting on a couch mouthing out the words, the comics.
I can ask my mom.
I got to see. I mean, I got a picture. See, I got the picture in my mind of you doing that, but it's your face with the beard. You've told me that story. I just think that story is incredible. I just love it.
My first foray into comics retail, there was a person who had kind of created his own little comic shop in his house. He'd taken his parents' garage and taken the garage door and built a wall and had rows of comic boxes and such. And he was selling back issues out of his house and through the mail. And it was, I found out about it. I would go there. I would buy stuff. Eventually we started talking and I would help out by grading and pricing books. Then when I went to college, I worked at a video store there was a comic store right around the corner, and I helped out there again, grading and pricing books. When I moved to Minnesota, I had a part-time job at a group home because that was where my interests lie in adolescent psychology. But they only had part-time available, so I got a full-time job at Shinders, which was a 13-store magazine store chain. They sold magazines. They had, like, the popular paperback books, comics, baseball cards, and porn. Lots and lots and lots of porn.
Jay Leno once made a comment. They were doing a thing where they were pushing, like, Cheers forward at, or pushing the Tonight Show forward a half hour instead of doing reruns. So they interviewed Jay for a local spot, and he goes, hey, yeah, I remember St. Paul area. How's that Shooter's area? Still selling all that porn?
I remember my interview there. They asked, what's the best-selling comic? And I said, well, do you mean overall or last month? And I went into way too much detail, and they went, okay, yeah, you're hired. And I kind of became the comic book, one of the comic book guys. They had the downtown guys, but they would put me store to store. And they learned whatever store I was in, both back issues and new issue sales would go up by about 50%. Because they had very few people who, when the people would come in to buy comics, I would go, oh, have you read this? You got to read this.
It's
the only sales job I've ever been any good at. I left in 92 and started buying books from Joe's shop. And very quickly, he had me picking up the new books on my way over on whatever night new comics came out. I would pick them up at the distribution center, and from there, it kind of became where I would be there on Tuesdays, and I would do the back issues, or when Joe would go on vacation, I'd watch the shop.
League of Substitute Retailers, away!
And he sold his shop to the previous owner, who then sold it to one of his employees, and that was Christy. And at Christie's Comics, I ended up doing a lot at Christie's Comics. Sometime we should go into how more and more responsibility kind of got shoved off on me because she had to work more and more hours at her job to keep the shop running. And then when Joe had his final shop, I worked there for about the whole time. I would do Fridays. And it was different from the big shop. The big shop, it was more coming in to hang out with Joe. We'd watch wrestling. We'd have fun. At the small shop, Joe was working. He had the job at TSA. So it was more I would come in and I would just be there. I'm also kind of an amateur comic book historian. And I'm the one who goes into detail about the history stuff.
I'd say you're amateur only in the case that you haven't written anything about it or made any money off it. You know more about comics than I think most people. I think you've forgotten more than most people ever know. You know, I mean, the only people who know more are people who are probably there. And even then, Stan Lee admits he doesn't remember everything.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you because a lot of my knowledge comes from being around older fans and being in internet discussion lists with older fans. You know, I've talked about the Timely Atlas list and the Kirby Ditko list. I'm the young guy on those lists.
He's so honest.
And there are guys who know so much more that I've learned so much from. You'll actually, if you pick up Alter Ego, you'll see a lot of their bylines in Alter Ego. People like
Alter Ego and issues of Back Issue. Oh, fantastic.
Yep.
And occasionally a good comics journal interview will give good stuff.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I come from. Radio-wise, I did in high school, I was very fascinated with radio to the point where my senior year, I kind of became friends with one of the weekend DJs at the local.
Oh, it's Radio Gaga, Radio Goo Goo, Radio Poo Poo. Oh, sorry.
That's why we don't have karaoke night here at Crazy Comics and Stories. But I got very interested in radio to the point where I would go to the local radio station and learn. The weekend disc jockey would show me, okay, this is how you do this, this is how you do this. And then in college, I did college radio for 3 years. And the more I learned about how radio works, the more I realized, yeah, I don't want to have a job where, oh, look, the ratings are down a tenth of a point. You're fired. Now you're going to have to move to some other state in order to get a job.
This is Corey Strode with the stock report for pig parts.
Podcasting, however, I found podcasting when iTunes started. iTunes added podcasts to it, and it was, oh, look, podcasts. And I had heard about it, so I just put in comic book. And up came like 3 or 4 comic book podcasts. And then a website that I went to, WrestleCrap.com, they started a podcast show. And Joe and I, when he would get back from his traveling, we would get together and just drive around. We call it a geek out day, where we go from comic shop to comic shop. And we would talk about comics. And Joe said, you know, we ought to record this, turn it into a podcast. So there you go, the secret origin of Crazy Comics and Stories. Now, why do we call it crazy? Because when Joe had the smaller hot comic shop, one of his employees started doing a mini comic about him called Crazy, what was it? Crazy Writer Retailer? Let me
crazy
look.
Crazy Retailer, yeah.
I have them here.
The Crazy
I have
Writer,
all 6 issues. It was Crazy Writer Comic Retailer.
It was pretty funny.
And by the end, it became
just that, Jess Heitland. He's on Facebook, and he actually used those mini comics as, I think they call it a portfolio, when he went into art school, art and design. And he said the instructor loved it because nobody had ever done that before. You know, people always come in with their big works, and I hear he's coming in with these 6 mini comics he did. And some of it I've got, again, I've got a album on my personal Facebook page, just Joe Ryder, that shows some of his artwork that he did outside of the comic book. Eventually I'll find the comic books and get Jess's permission to post them. But and I think that's something too. Both Corey and I are on Facebook as well as our page. So if you want, swing by, give us a like. You know, if you want to like me on my personal page, feel free. You know, the pictures are open. So if you want to see some of the stuff that we've been talking about, you know, what the shop looked like, what the inside was, some of the characters that were there, feel free, you know.
Joe, do you hear that?
What was that? Apathy?
The sad music, everyone.
Oh, sad
music. It's the sad music. We have sad news. Sad news, Joe. The longest running Vertigo book, Hellblazer, will be ending with issue 300.
One more to collect. I always have the urge to pick up books once they're canceled.
Well, I think it's going to be hard to get back issues because one of the reasons it's being canceled is it's been hovering around 9,000, selling about 9,000 copies a month. And while 5-6 years ago when there seemed to be a little more tolerance for the Vertigo books, pretty much now, hey, if you're not selling 15 to 20,000 even in Vertigo, they're going to cancel you. And Constantine will be relegated to the DC Universe, the younger version of Constantine, who doesn't swear as much and doesn't do things like defeat demons with orgasms. I don't think that stuff goes in the regular DC Universe. Another book, American Vampire, which is actually one of the better-selling books, is going on hiatus. Scott Snyder.
This is season one. We'll see season two later, or just their fancy way of saying we're getting rid of it.
It's hard to say because Scott Snyder's doing, you know, Batman books, and those sell really, really well. And American Vampire, when Stephen King was the co-writer, it sold really well. And now it's settled down around 12 to 15,000 copies, depending. And I know when TV, when they announce that a TV series is going on hiatus, they're pretty much saying, yeah, it's canceled, and sometime later we'll burn off the old episodes. The rumor is that this going on hiatus means they're going to come back, finish up the series, and be done with it. It's Vertigo with only two long-running series, and that's Jack, the Fables, and the spinoff.
Yeah. Jack of All Trades, I think. No, that was Bruce Campbell's.
Yeah, I don't remember the title of it because I don't
Something with Jack.
It. Yeah.
The only, you know, so, when I read that about Constantine, you know, first of all, I'm like, well, whatever. He's already there. He's in Justice League Dark.
Yeah.
But what I thought of interest was there was always this scene, if you go back to the original books of magic, where they had Tim Hunter. And there was a scene where Mr. E brought Tim forward, and there was a scene where like all the superheroes were being decimated while Tim had become the most powerful magician he was destined to be. And the question was, would he become good or evil? You know, and they, Mr. E thought he would be evil, which is why he was there. And I always thought that DC shorted themselves by never exploring that. I mean, it was interesting because you look at Tim and you think, oh, that's just a Harry Potter ripoff. But if you ever read the book's magic, it's much more insidious the way he did magic. But this could be an opportunity where you could bring back that character and maybe do something with that whole idea. Or will it get a plot line that gets abandoned like so many other DC things now that the 52 is here? You know? Like Grant Morrison with the living son Solaris, you know, the threat was always, he'll come back at least one more time in our lifetime. And I was waiting for it. Or where the hell did he get deposited? You know, you could even do a Legion of Superheroes story where he comes back and attacks. But like I said, with the 52 universe up in arms, it's not so much, okay, we're going to take old stuff and continue it with the exception of like Green Lantern, Batman. We're just going to reinvent everything over again. Yeah.
Well, speaking of cliffhangers that were never resolved, how'd you like that transition? Remember the when I said that I used to, you know, that I did college radio? And yeah, That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call a transition, where you move from one subject to another with some sort of bridging mechanism.
You know, it's funny.
Kind of doing the behind the scenes thing.
Ed Liberal, he works at the radio station out here, rock radio station. He's a big comic fan, so.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of neat, you know. I did like you did. You know, I did college radio just enough to know I don't want to do radio.
Newsarama, which used to be a very cool comic book news site and now is pretty annoying because you've always got an ad at the top, and whenever they do a list, you have to click through each one so that you see all the ads, and very annoying. But somebody sent me the to-be-continued 10 Marvel cliffhangers left hanging and said, did these ever get resolved? So I thought I would go through them on the show.
I'm trying to find that. Have you linked that anywhere?
No, I sent you an email of it, though, on the Facebook. But if you want, you could post it. Once you find that link, you could post it on the Facebook while I blather on.
Okay, go ahead, blather on. I'll see. I'll find my email, geez.
All right. Number 10 is Silver Surfer number 18. The description here is, the reunion of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on the adventures of Norrin Radd was the kind of thing that would have thrilled the Marvel faithful when it happened in the 18th issue, the first Silver Surfer series in 1970, especially when it brought about a new direction for the character as the savage Silver Surfer, mad, bad, and declaring himself the enemy of all humanity. Well, what happened with it was, Silver Surfer started as a
book.
Well, it started as a double-sized comic. And it was 25 cents while everything else was 15. So it didn't sell as well as it needed to. So they brought it down to the regular 15 cent size. And that really didn't give it a big sales boost. So what Stan did was what he always did. He said to Jack Kirby, why don't you come in? We'll do a few issues to bring me in the readers. And just, you know, let go, do what you want. And what Kirby wanted to do was turn it into an action-style comic. And what he was going to do, he was going to pencil one issue, lay out the next two or three, and then Herb Trimpe was going to take over from there. And it was going to be more where the Silver Surfer's fighting with both heroes and villains, kind of like what they were doing with Hulk, because Hulk was selling well. So Kirby did issue 18. Sales came back. Sales for the previous issues were so poor that they canceled the book with issue 18, and there was never an issue 19. And when the Silver Surfer showed up again, it was in the build up to the Defenders, and they just kind of forgot. They said, no, we're not going to do that angry Silver Surfer. We'll go back to the whiny, mopey Silver Surfer. Mm-hmm. Now, in the late 90s,
that would be a good miniseries for somebody with the chops to do, to fill in. You know, because when Silver Surfer left on that page, he was basically declaring war on mankind. He had been kind of a mopey dope through the whole issues, talking about morality and stuff. It's good reading. And is it out in a archive edition? There must be ways to pick it up cheap.
Yeah, you could pick up the two Masterworks or the first Silver Surfer Essential. Joe, you think that'd be a good idea to kind of explain that, wrap that story up, huh? Marvel did!
You could flesh it out more.
They did!
Oh.
There was a series back in the late 90s called Marvel Universe. And it was written by Roger Stern, and he would just go back and do stories set in Marvel's past. And one of these stories, I think, was, I'm going to have to look it up. I think Keith Giffen was involved somehow. But it was a Silver Surfer Spider-Man team up, believe it or not. And we find out that the Silver Surfer was under the influence of Psycho Man, who had manipulated his emotions and turned him evil.
Oh, I just thought he was PMSing.
Well, hello, kids. It's your old Uncle Rat Bastard here, and while I was editing, I was able to look up the comic. It was not
Marvel Universe, nor was it my first thought, Tangled Web. It was a series that started in 1999. It was Web Spinners, and the first couple issues were plotted and drawn by Keith Giffen, and it's Web Spinners issues 4, 5, and 6 if you want to dig through the back issue bins. Or if you don't want to dig through the back issue bins, you could just continue to listen to us talk about it.
Yes, that is a cliffhanger, but it was left hanging for over 20 years.
And that's something I've gabbed about in previous podcasts, is that was something that I used to love about Marvel, that they would somehow, somewhere, wrap it up. And I always felt kind of, I guess smug would be the word for better, you know, because it would be, you know, I know what they're talking about because I read those issues. Or like when Shogun Warriors, you know, they were all, it just kind of stopped because they lost the license for the book. Then they finished it in Fantastic Four. Claw the Slayer stopped. It was finished in Marvel 2-in-1. You know, they were real good at doing that. Maybe not for 20 years. But as you see, as Corey goes into this, most of the time they were wrapped up, just not where you would think. And sometimes not the way the writer probably wanted it.
Yeah, sometimes the writer wasn't involved in a lot of ways. As you'll see, a lot of times, especially in the 70s, a writer would have a book canceled, and then in another book they're writing, they'd just bring in and wrap up the story, such as in number 9, Amazing Adventure number 16, which was the end of the Beast solo series. They, believe it or not, there was a time when the X-Men were not that popular, and they thought that Beast, with the name The Beast, could have a solo comic during the monster craze. So they turned him from a guy who was just kind of a big beefy guy who could use his feet as well as his hands and real acrobatic. They made him blue and furry. And as it says here, Amazing Adventures number 16 wasn't the end of the series, but it was the final installment of the solo run starring Hank McCoy, also known as The Beast, before writer Steve Englehart had a chance to wrap up any of his long-running subplots. Even the primary plot of Hank and former girlfriend Vita on a mission to help her brother in some explained way, and it actually talks about here, Englehart was writing Incredible Hulk. He wrapped up some of the storylines there. He also was the writer on the Avengers, and when he brought the Beast into the Avengers, he wrapped up all of the Rocks on Oil subplots he was doing. So, again, it was a cliffhanger left hanging. Well, not really. It just moved into other books. I don't think they have it here, but there was even in the Defenders by Steve Gerber, there was this elf who every few issues, this elf with a gun would show up and kill someone at random. And Gerber was kicked off the book with issue 41 when Gary Conway came back to Marvel as editor-in-chief and said, well, I'm editor-in-chief. That means I get to write the books I want. I want to write the Avengers. I want to write the Defenders. And whoever's working on the book now, you're fired anyway. And Gerber's Elf with a Gun story, he himself said he had no idea where he was going with it. He just had thrown that in as kind of, oh, you know, I'll think of something as I do it. Something, you know, I'll think of some sort of idea. Because that's how he did a lot of his plotting. He would just throw in stuff and go, oh, well, if I think of something later, I'll use it. And
And even the Beast thing about him turning blue, if I recall, the big thing was they brought back X-Factor with the original X-Men together again, and they resurrected Jean Grey. They even kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, Hank became blue, but I take that back. The issue after Jean Grey died was kind of a Clips episode, you know, where they kind of did a history of the X-Men up to that point.
Yes.
And the Beast had made an appearance because he was part of that storyline, and the Cyclops was thinking, you know, whatever the accident that turned him blue, he refused to talk about even to this day. And that eventually filed into the X-Factor comic book when they brought the original X-Men back together. And then they dealt with that. And I believe, was he human at the time and they turned him back blue? Or
they turned him human for X-Factor.
Yeah.
And
so
then,
they got more into what had happened and they fleshed that out.
And then they turned him blue again because they realized, hey, the fans like him blue much, much better.
He wore blue velvet.
Omega the Unknown, this is one that was left hanging, and I can even explain why. Steve Gerver and Mary Screens know that if Omega was getting canceled, they wanted to go out with a bang. In particular, the bang of a gun that on the last page of the issue kills the title character before any of the secrets that the series had been hinting at all along had a chance to be revealed. And if you buy, it's out in a paperback, the original Omega the Unknown, it ends with, this will be resolved in future issues of The Defenders. Well, then Gerber was fired from The Defenders, and nobody dealt with it for years. And then I can't remember who was writing it, but Stephen Grant. Stephen Grant was writing The Defenders, and he wrapped up the Omega storyline. And if you read, I think they put those issues in the Omega, the Unknown trade paperback. They don't fit. And the reason was Gerber and Mary Screens never told anyone the secret connection between the title character, Omega, and the teenage boy who was kind of the focus of the series. Gerber never told anyone in interviews, in email, etc. He would always say Mary Screens, who co-created the book with him, would have to okay it and be involved in the writing for him to resolve that story. And he passed away before they ever did. So while there was a conclusion in the Marvel Universe, issues 76 and 77 of The Defenders, it's not the conclusion that the creators had in mind.
I even recall somebody in the letter pages yelling that something was wrong because at the end of Omega the Unknown, the body was destroyed. And then here they are, they have the body with them.
Right.
And I think they just yelled, anybody wants to give a no prize out for figuring this out. But they, as far as I remember, they never did.
No. If you want a good idea, the only clue Gerber ever gave was to some of us on the Howard the Duck discussion board. He said, if you look at what I was doing in Guardians of the Galaxy in Marvel Premiere, that will give you a good clue as to where it was going. And the Guardians would have been involved in the resolution of Omega the Unknown. So if you want to play around with that.
Who's the lady he wrote this series with? I mean, has she done anything else or?
Not in comics, other than with him. They were romantically involved. Uh-huh. And the way he would write is he'd go home and they'd throw ideas back and forth. That would be the plot. Then when the script came, they would both kind of go over the script together. She did help with Gerber's last major series called Hard Time, which I highly recommend. It was they did two runs. There was a 12 issue, then an 8 issue. And it's about a teenager who his powers manifest. In manifesting, they kill people. So he is put in prison.
It's DC, wasn't it?
Yep, it was. I think it ended up through, it was one of DC's short-lived imprints. So it wasn't Vertigo, but it was a Vertigo-like imprint. Number 7 is Machine Man number 9. When Jack Kirby's Machine Man got canceled, it would be revived, numbering intact, a year later with a new creative team because Kirby had left Marvel. And really, when Machine Man was canceled, it was one of those, Kirby's leaving Marvel, so his last Captain America issue came out, 2001 A Space Odyssey was long gone, but Machine Man was canceled, Devil Dinosaur was canceled, The Eternals was canceled. Let's see, in the last issue, He decides to stand up against the military that had spent the last 9 years chasing after him. No more Mr. Nice Robot. Pretty much a lot like the Silver Surfer number 18. When the book was canceled over an Incredible Hulk, issues 235 to 237, they did a bit where Machine Man was completely shut down and rebooted. And when he came back from the reboot, he was more of a traditional robot superhero. And that's kind of how the character was up until Warren Ellis got a hold of him in Next Wave, gave him a new personality as kind of a very snarky robot who thought that humans were inferior. And that personality has stuck through. I cannot recommend Next Wave highly enough. 12 issues by Warren Ellis. That was when you had the small shop. People would come in and I would go, you have to read this.
Yeah, yeah. It was good.
Issues number 6 is Nova number 25. You might imagine that the last issue of a series would try to bring things to something resembling a conclusion, but that wasn't the route Marv Wolfman and Carmine Infantino chose. The final issue, the original Nova, ends with our hero in space preparing to defend the planet Xandar against a Skrull invasion.
Silly Skrulls.
The other plot line that wasn't resolved was there was a villain in Nova called the Sphinx, which had a dark secret. When Marv Wolfman was writing the Fantastic Four, he did a year-long story about the war between the Skrulls and the Xandarians, also involving the Sphinx, where we find out everything, the war is resolved, Nova is all tied up. So that, again, not really left hanging because the story just zoomed right over to Fantastic Four within a couple of months. We're up to number 5, Joe. Spider-Woman number 50.
Dun, dun, dun. And I remember reading Spider-Woman. And when I read this, I don't remember this issue.
Well,
although I think I have it in my collection because it's got a pretty cool photo cover.
At the end of the book, she dies. And
she got better.
Well, the way she dies, everybody's memory of hers was erased as well.
Ah, kind of like Sentry.
So, for some reason, they just wanted to wipe her out of continuity. I think maybe they said, okay, we're going to rest the name and bring another character.
I remember a story from John Nunziata, again, Twin City or St. Paul comic. And he was telling me about how at the time Spider-Woman 1 came out and Howard the Duck 1 was coming out. And, you know, they're ordering stuff and you're thinking, oh, Spider-Woman, Spider-Man, this is going to be hot. So stores ordered tons of Spider-Woman number 1. Did not order Buku Buckus on Howard the Duck. Consequently, Howard the Duck, number 1, went nuts, especially when Kiss made a guest appearance in it and word got out. Meanwhile, he was just sitting on Spider-Woman number 1. He says, I got 100 in the basement. I got no Howard the Ducks, and I could sell a lot of them.
Well, there were two reasons for what happened there. Howard the Duck, one of the reasons it was so scarce, this was very, very early in comic shops. So there wasn't a lot of there was tons of distributors, but there weren't a lot of comic shops, and there was a lot of demand for Howard the Duck. I told the story like one or two episodes ago about how Roy Thomas told Gerber, get Howard the Duck out of the book. We don't want a stupid, funny animal in the book. Then he went to San Diego, and people were like, when's Howard the Duck getting his own book? So it was 76 when the first issue of Howard the Duck came out. Comic shops, distribution not that good, they would go from store to store to store to store buying up the Howard the Ducks. They'd go to the grocery store, they'd go to the drug store, they'd go, you know, wherever comics were on the newsstand, they would just go in and buy them all.
Oh yeah. Even when my shop was about, there were less and less newsstands, but if we had a hot comic coming out, you could usually count about 3 to 4 weeks after it hit that you could find them, you know, places, usually Barnes and Noble, what was it, Walden Books in the store, P. Dalton, you know, chains that, two of those chains that don't exist anymore. And if you had a grocery store that had comics, you could usually hit them and pick up those copies. And of course, they were back issues at the time. So even if you bought them at cover price with tax, you know, you'd be getting some decent money turned around.
So Spider-Woman, the reason Spider-Woman existed is because there was word that somebody was going to do a Spider-Woman cartoon. And Marvel said, well, we can't have somebody have the copyright to Spider-Woman. You know, we own the copyright to Spider-Man. So they did that one shot in Marvel Spotlight where she was a mutated spider. And they were going to go two series because that issue had sold well enough. The thing is, Marv Wolfman
she appeared in Two-in-One, Marvel Two-in-One, yep, before the series.
There was a Two-in-One where Marv Wolfman wrote her as well. And when they started the series, they wanted it to be as different from Spider-Man as possible. So they went a very dark horror style. And the problem is people picked up Spider-Woman thinking, hey, this is going to be a good superhero book. And instead, no, here's this dark horror-themed book. So Spider-Woman never really sold well. I think it was always bi-monthly. Now, was it a cliffhanger? No, they ended the book, got rid of the character, clearing the way for a new character. But they changed their mind a little later on. So Roger Stern brought her back in the Avengers, issue 238. 6 months after. So I guess whatever pitch they had for a new Spider-Woman fell apart and they said, well, we got to keep the copyright because, you know, the minute we give up on Spider-Woman, somebody's going to grab it.
Well, they did Captain Marvel to DC. So, you know, they're obviously know what they're talking about. Was this after they lost Champions or before?
Oh, long before. They didn't lose Champions. So
they knew it, but they didn't practice it yet.
Right. And Captain Marvel's had nothing to do with DC, Joe. What it was, Goodman found out that the name was up for grabs because Myron Feiss, I think it's Myron Feiss, put out a Captain Marvel book. He discovered that the book had not been printed for over 10 years, and copyright and trademark you have to show every 10 years. So he put out a book called Captain Marvel, and it was a Captain Marvel who, when he said the magic word, Zam, his arms, legs, and head would fly off.
Split.
Yes. Oh, that's right. He'd say split, and they'd fly off, and he'd say Zam, and they'd all come together.
I remember
and
that.
And Goodman
from,
said, well, if the Captain Marvel name's out there, we're Marvel Comics. We damn well better have it. And he told Stan, I want a Captain Marvel on the stand so we can own the copyright to the name Captain Marvel, which is why over at DC, they were given the original Captain Marvel. They can't call a comic book Captain Marvel. They can have a character named that, but the name Captain Marvel as the title of a comic is copyrighted. And it's also why Marvel will put out a Captain Marvel book as often as they can. Because they don't want DC
but
to have that name.
Now I'm waiting for the official Howard the Duck, Donald Duck crossover.
That would be good.
I can't think of any Duck Muppet characters, but, you know, you could throw in a couple chickens. Guest appearance, Camille the Chicken.
Number four is Dazzler 42. As an example of what happens when plans change along the way, the final issue of Alison Blair's solo series ends with her being offered a position in X-Factor by the Beast, a position she ended up not taking because the original behind-the-scenes plan to have her as the fifth member of the team ended up being changed since cooler heads had decided to resurrect Jean Grey to fill that role instead.
Meh.
I don't see this as even a cliffhanger. I see it more as, okay, the book's being canceled and the character's going to show up somewhere else. She did end up in the whole Chris Claremont mutant group. She showed up in New Mutants 42.
Wasn't it?
Well, it says here it was 42. And then she became a member of the X-Men during the late 80s, early 90s.
And it wasn't even like she showed up. Yeah, that was the thing with Claremont is when he was writing the X-Men after Byrne got off. It was right before 200. He had this, or no, 150, I'm sorry. He had this episode where, like, Spider-Woman showed up and Dazzler showed up and Banshee met his daughter Siren for the first time and they had a big reunion and then they never referred to it again. You're like, where did they go? You know, he just never, you know, he was so busy getting ready to cram into 150. And a lot of that they talk about is it Amazing Heroes or one of the episodes where they talk about this, the original storyline they were going to do with Jean Grey versus what they had to do now because Shooter came in and said, hey, if she wiped out an entire planet, she's got to die. She can't be a hero and live with that type of crime. And some of those issues in between read like he was just cramming till he can get to issue 150, you know. Scott abruptly left the group. He found some hot blonde chickie on a boat. They had a shipwreck. He was on an island with Magneto. Meanwhile, the other teams fought Dr. Doom, which later was a Dr. Doom robot. Mass hysteria. It was so weird coming off such a great run of that, and then just kind of, it was dreck. And then by the time they got to issue 150 is one of those issues I keep, and I've got two copies, a good copy that's in nice shape and one that I just read every so often because that was a good issue. And Kitty Pryde joined. I don't remember. To the Essentials.
Number three, The Thing, number 36. The Thing had a solo series.
Yes, after Secret Wars, he decided to stay behind.
It was during Secret Wars that this happened. Because yes. What it was, they canceled Marvel 2-in-1 and gave The Thing a solo series.
Yeah, that's right. He became a ultimate wrestler or something.
Yep. Ben Grimm didn't exactly make it out of his first solo series in good shape. By the closing pages of the issue, he'd started mutating from his well-known Rocky form into something far more hideous. A plot that would eventually lead him all the way back to Monster Island, although with the stop off at West Coast Avengers. Again, this wasn't really a cliffhanger. Book was canceled. They had built up a storyline where he was mutating again. They had him go over to West Coast Avengers, furthered the storyline, and then over to back into the Fantastic Four where the storyline was resolved. It was probably along the lines of, okay, well, this book's being canceled. We want him back in the Fantastic Four. And John Byrne, who was writing the Fantastic Four, said, well, here's how I'd like to bring him in. Oh, okay, we'll set that up. As you can tell, this article, I don't agree that these were all left hanging. Number two, Power Man Iron Fist, number 125. Talk about the ultimate cliffhanger. The final issue of Power Man Iron Fist not only saw the apparent death of Danny Rand, the immortal Iron Fist, but also ended better. With Luke Cage.
Excuse me? I'm not dead yet. I feel happy.
Luke Cage had been framed for Iron Fist's murder and was on the run to try and clear his name.
Sweet Christmas!
Now, they did resolve this in... They resolved the Luke Cage story in Power Man, but a lot of it was... With Iron Fist, they looked at the character as, you know, the whole Kung Fu thing is over. We canceled Master of Kung Fu. Nobody seems to care. Iron Fist, yeah, nobody seems to care. Let's kill the character for a big shock and also return Luke Cage to the closer to his origin, which was a very big thing at Marvel at the time. In the origin of Power Man, he was framed for a crime he didn't commit. He had changed his name because he was, he'd been in prison, et cetera, et cetera. They wanted to get back to that. They were going to spin a Power Man series out of it,
but they, again, just never got around to it. So Roger Stern wrapped it all up in the Avengers. And then back in 92, John Byrne brought back Iron Fist in the Namor series. And remember, nobody at Marvel dies for very long except Uncle Ben. Now, remember,
well,
8 years ago...
Isn't he running around from an alternate reality?
No, he got sent back to that alternate reality.
Oh, I must have missed that, because I just remember that. There's so many things I forget.
The last one, and again, this is another one where they say, oh, it was a cliffhanger left hanging. No, no. X-Factor number 149 ended with the demise of Alex Summers, also known as Havoc. No, that's because the next month was Mutant X, which he didn't die. He got shifted into another dystopian version of the X-Men. So he hung around there for 32 issues, and then he came back. So a lot of these cliffhangers are just, no, the book's being canceled, and they used it as kind of a springboard to move the character to a different book. There, I have completed the request, Joe. Who says we don't listen to our listeners?
What'd you say?
Well, you don't listen to me. That's different than not listening to the listeners.
Well, see, the difference is that you get all the emails, and I think we had a hotline at one time, but I don't remember a phone number, but, you know.
We still do!
He never shares shit with me, okay? Put it on our podcast page. I'm so lonely out here in Liberal. Seriously, talking about a segue. I had talked, I said earlier, I don't have a comic shop to shop at. You know, I mean, I found some comics at the local antique store, and they're like every antique store. The ones that they think are collectible are things you and I would dig, and the listeners would dig through quarter boxes at cons to get. They don't have them horrendously priced, but I ain't going to pay, you know, $2-3 for them because they ain't worth it. And they did have a stack of old Archies and Richie Rich and Disney that I may go back and dig through for a quarter a piece. If anything, just for reading material or just because as a kid, you know, that's was the stuff I used to read. You know, I'd pick up a Richie Rich comic or I loved Uncle Scrooge. I didn't realize at the time it was all Carl Barks writing. So when I get the itch to buy, there's only one place I can go right now. Yep. eBay.
Oh no.
And yeah, I thought I'd give you guys a glimpse of how my thought projections work as I'm buying through eBay. And this is only like the last couple weeks of stuff that I have bought because of boredom. Like just last night, I got into a discussion with somebody. I posted a picture on my page of Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. And then I took it down and I posted some funny thing. And then the guy said, I think you should put the Sabrina picture back up. Okay. And this is the drawn one, not the TV show one. So I started thinking, just what is the Sabrina number one? You know, I have the number one where, who is the actress that did the live action show? I can't remember.
Yeah, but it was, I don't either because
it was
I'm
a picture of the drawn Sabrina with the actress next to it. And I have that because, you know, I pick up photo covers whenever. So I started going back, figuring, okay, let's find out what the first Sabrina the Teenage Witch was. Well, it actually is Archie's Madhouse number 22. The only one on eBay somebody has slabbed for like $300. I don't know if that's a good price or a bad price. I generally don't like slabbed comics because you can't read them. There's only a handful of slabbed comics I have. One of them is the aforementioned Spider-Man 178, Amazing Spider-Man, that I had slabbed because, again, it was my first comic. And due to Bo Smith, the writer, he talked something about comics he slabbed. He only slabs comics that mean something to him. And I thought, well, let's slab it. And it came back like a 5.5 because obviously I read the crap out of it. I have one I think I picked up, Heroes Initiative, that had autographs by Stan Lee and John Romita Sr. And again, you know, I'll post this stuff when I get home and I can actually play with my collection. So I started looking, and sure enough, I found a Sabrina the Teenage Witch, number one. It appeared in, I believe, 72, and it had Giant on it, the giant-sized Sabrina, you know. And
wow, maybe she should go on a diet.
You normally don't call a teenage
girl. Crickets like that,
I mean,
Joe.
We get a lot of kiddos on a giant-sized man thing, but still. But Sabrina,
I don't know. Maybe
there
are some women who are looking for a giant-sized man thing. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. You bet a beautiful crowd. Tip your weight,
and Sabrina was one of my teenage crushes. So, you know, a giant-sized Sabrina would have been pretty cool in my book. But then again, somebody had the issue number one in very fine shape for upwards of 70, 80 bucks. Somebody had one in good shape for 35 bucks. And somebody posted one for issues 1 through 3 for anywhere from very good to fine for 35 bucks. So I bought them. They're in the mail now. Previously to that, one of the things I pick up, I've been getting into Supergirl art. Not any art. I like the Supergirl in the 70s, you know, where she had the V-neck, the poofy sleeves, the go-go boots. It's not a lot of people draw that Supergirl. Everybody's drawing the new Supergirl, the 52. They're drawing the teenage bopper that Michael Turner did with the bare midriff. Occasionally you'll see people drawing the way she appeared when she was a protoplasm that was making love to President Luther or whatever. I tend to,
people
depending
think
on what it
joking.
Is.
Joking. That was a real storyline.
Yeah. And there's actually a story somewhere on the internet where I forget who it was when he decided to bring back Supergirl as Superman's cousin. He was at Six Flags and he looked up and there's Supergirl and a protoplasmic entity from another entity, another world, who has come to this world and taken the shape of Supergirl in order to fight justice. And he looked at that thing up on Six Flags and thought, that's the dumbest thing I've ever read. We got to turn her back into what she was originally. So now she is indeed the cousin of Kal. But this particular one I picked up was a DC 52 card. And it was drawn by, as soon as I get the name, Jeff Schultz, who is an Archie artist. And although he didn't draw the style I enjoy, I did like the card. And I figured he was putting his card up for 10 bucks. I put it up for 10 bucks and I won it, you know. So another piece for the collection. Earlier podcasts, I gabbed about how I really getting into freebie comics. Well, they just had one come out. Apparently there was an inaugural. It has something to do with basketball, I believe, but the Brooklyn Nets had a inaugural game, and they had a game program, and then Marvel Comics did a Brooklyn Knight comic based on Deron Williams. And if you went to the game, you got both the game book and the comic book for free. But it was only if you went to Barclays Center on November 3rd. When I read about this, I went on eBay right away, and there was one guy had them both for sale for 25 bucks. So what the heck? Pick it up, 25 bucks. Since then, a few more have showed up. You know, if you get the program book and the comic, you can get them for about 25. The comic alone's maybe 15. But I felt kind of arrogantly proud because at the time I picked mine, the only one on eBay. And that's just the way I roll. My old partner, Pat, he is selling stuff slowly on eBay. At the last con, he had his final going out of business sale. I believe it was the 9th annual.
Yes.
But he finally did it. He finally cleared out the warehouse. His mom built him a shed. And his dad got to use half of it, and Pat got to use the other half. And that's where Pat would store his comics that he bought for investment It was where we would store our Comic-Con comics when we put our stuff together. It was actually heated. Pat didn't keep it heated year-round, but when we go to work on it, we crank the heat up and we go out there and we'd be pricing books. I can't tell you the number of times I'd back my old Chevy, or not Chevy, my Ford Ranger up. We'd unload 60 boxes into my truck. And then after the con, we'd unload them back, you know, long boxes stuffed with comics. I mean, it was like a ritual almost. And Pat, he finally sold off everything. The stuff he's got left, he's just going to put up on eBay. And when I get home, if I ever do an eBay store, I'll help him out. He had put up the Legion of Superheroes, The Curse, deluxe hardcover.
Ooh.
This was the, Keith Giffen stuff doing Legion of Superheroes from 297, 313, and the annuals, all dealing with Darkseid. And DC had put out a number of hardcovers where they would reprint these editions, but they made the damn thing so expensive, you know, $40. You're like, geez, for 50 bucks, I can get an archive edition, you know, and get some really cool stuff. Here's stuff that you could readily find in cheap boxes. You know, and granted, they're giving it a deluxe hardcover, but it just, for 40 bucks, it wasn't worth it. Pat put it up for 20 because he basically read it and he's like, well, I have the original, sell it. So I bought it from him. I picked up another Supergirl
sketch card. No
friendship
discount, right?
No, no. He didn't charge me shipping, but I told him when I get back, you're going to have to buy me pizza. anyways, I picked up another Supergirl sketch card from Bianca Thompson. Again, not the style I pick up, but it was a fairly decent Supergirl in a bikini top. You know, you gotta admit, there are a lot of weirdos on eBay. I mean, just type in Supergirl, Power Girl, Lady Death, whatever, and watch some of the bizarre ways. I mean, these guys really got, they either got boob fetishes or they just have no idea how anatomy works. You know, so a lot of that I skip over. Every so often though, you'll see things. And you know, this happened to be one. I just bid 10 bucks. I won it. I did pick up an adult muscle shirt costume accessory bodybuilding sexy mascot six pack. That was for my daughter's Halloween costume. Basically, it's just you put it over your shirt and it makes it look like you're buff. And I told her she could give it to you, Corey, if you want. In the Supergirl theme, I picked up a Crisis on Infinite Earth DC Direct statue. Imagine the cover of George Perez, and I believe it was Crisis number 8, where Superman's holding Supergirl. And it's almost an iconic cover now because it's been spoofed so many times. This statue, the boots of Superman were cracked. Normally, this statue runs about 300 bucks new. I bid on it, and I got it for about 50 bucks, you know, and I'll just put a little paint around the statue. So I figured I'm never going to buy one for 300 bucks. And then, of course, a week later, somebody sold one for 125 bucks, and I'm like, oh, eBay, you're killing me. One of the other things I like to pick up, Hot Wheels. Walmart had a Batman commemorative edition Hot Wheel, and it was basically different Hot Wheels. Most of them they had put in previous packages, but what they do is they take, okay, this is the one from the movie with the Keaton movie, so they put that Batman symbol in. This is the one from the 60s show. Here's the animated show, and it was like an 8-car pack. And
oh, cool.
Although normally, you know, you see them on eBay, they go $6. I just relax until eventually I'll find them in the store. Because what people don't realize, these are mass-produced things. Just because you find one and it's worth $5-$6 now, it's going to drop. You know, I sold these cars in the shop for a while when I could find them. And yeah, when they first come out, collectors go nuts because they're worried about variants. They're worried about errors. They want the first one edition. I'm kind of like, I'll wait. It'll come out. In this case, because it was a Walmart exclusive, I never saw them and I want them. So I picked them up. You know, picked up a set off eBay for like 18 bucks. In a similar vein, there's a store called Kroger's, and they had exclusive Halloween cars. Two of them I was interested in, the Batmobile, which they shaded a slight purple, and they also had a Ghostbuster car, but in this case, I just picked up the Batman one for about $5. You know, it's $2 in the store. You got it, I want it, I'll give you that. The next one you guys got to keep under your hat. Shh, quiet. For my daughter for Christmas, I picked up a Batman Legacy Harley Quinn action figure. This is one where
Ooh.
she's carrying a bat. Slightly insane. So it's at home. This one you can blab about. I picked up a John Cena Dwayne The Rock Johnson autographed signature from when they teamed together last year.
Oh,
Or was
okay.
that this year? That
Well,
was for
they
Holly,
teamed
my dear.
up at last year's Survivor Series, then they fought each other at WrestleMania, which I was able to find the DVD finally dirt cheap. With my wrestling DVDs, I've learned, you know what? If you wait about 6 to 9 months, that DVD that's $30 is on half.com at $10. So I'm finally going to get to watch WrestleMania.
Unless it's something that comes with something cool, like when I talked about the Avengers release, came with an exclusive graphic novel, original
Yeah.
graphic novel that Peter David wrote, which I haven't read yet. You know, same thing. You know, the Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man DVD just came out from the last movie. I can wait. Someone's going to have it used. Case in point, the next thing I bought, the Ratatouille DVD. My wife called, said, we don't have Ratatouille. Go ahead and buy it. Find it
There you
cheap
go.
on eBay. The next one, and remember, this is all within the last couple weeks.
You've had a lot of spare time for the internets, haven't you, while I've been working my 60-hour weeks.
I get this urge to shop. I don't necessarily have to buy, but you know, and you think of, I'm just talking about the stuff that I got. I mean, there's things that I didn't win. You know, there was a ooh, who did the Danger Girl? Jeff Campbell?
J. Scott Campbell.
He had a drawing of Supergirl the way I like it with the 70s, and I didn't win that. You know, it just got away from me. It went over $400, and you know, granted it was within $80 of what I bid on it, but you're like at the time. You know, you get outbid on this stuff. I was at work or just not online. And you're thinking, okay, normally I bid what I would pay. And then I only want $80 more. But I picked up Rom the Space Knight accessories. And as you all remember,
Ooh.
I guess he called it the Universal Translator, his neutralizer and his analyzer. Well, the ROM figure I have does not have the neutralizer with it. And I've been looking for it for literally 15, 20 years. And somebody had the accessories, and I'd been bidding on ROM things. I mean, a guy had a set of three ROMs. One came with all the accessories, the other twos didn't. And a basic ROM figure, because of the rarity of them, sells for about $100. And so I'm thinking, well, even if I buy these ROM figures, and then I can make a complete set, I can sell the other ones off, get my money back, and now I have a complete one. Well, and you know, I have yet to win a set like that, but in this case, I did win the accessories. So when I get home, I will put together my ROM piece and probably turn around and sell the two extra ones on eBay and let her roll. This one, I was quite proud of. This is actually a first for me. I've been decide when I decided to collect just Supergirl art, I decided, you know, okay, I'm gonna buy the Supergirl I like. I will buy previous ones, you know, so if like I got a really nice piece that Jim Mooney did of Supergirl. And again, if you go to my Facebook page, look under Supergirl art photo album, you'll see everything I've got up to this date, except the stuff I'm talking about yet. Anyways, I've been trying to avoid buying original art, you know, art that was actually done and appeared in a comic book. Well, as you know, there are always exceptions. And in this case, I picked up a Kurt Swan original Bronze Age from Superman Family that he had done. And on this particular page, it's got Supergirl in tug of war with the villain. And then all of a sudden the Justice League shows up and they're all basically under this supervillain's control. The supervillain's a female, and for whatever reason, Supergirl could not be hypnotized. And so it's really nice Golden Age Superman art, or Bronze Age Superman art. She's wearing the costume I have. I've got Kurt Swan drawing Superman, Green Lantern, small shots, Black Canary, Flash, Batman, all on this one page. It's Superman Family 171. Out of the 100 pagers, page 15 from 175. And, you know, the bottom line is you're not going to get Kurt Swan art cheap because the man is gone. He's up there with Kirby now, drawing whatever. And this one actually was really cool, and I bid on it. And I was surprised I got it as cheap as I did for about $260. And then I found out later my buddy Pat was looking at that, and he thought he bid on it. But
you beat him.
I did. And that's just because he bid what he wanted. And he, you know, Pat again, he bids on covers. He was telling me about some 2-page George Perez cover he picked up, you know, and I told him, I said, one of these days we're going to set up just a gallery of the stuff you have because it's utterly amazing. And what he does is he puts it on the wall and he has the good stuff framed. Speaking of which, well, one of my old employees, Mike Edmondson, if you ever need somebody to frame something really nice, Mike does phenomenal jobs. I don't know if he has an official website, but if he does, I'll put it up. Or if you want to contact him, get a hold of me or Corey and we'll set you up with him because he does really good work. And I'm thinking with this particular page, I may actually frame it. You know, find a copy of Superman Family and maybe have the artwork, the cover, and then the actual page, you know, on one
cool,
big.
Cool, yeah.
You know, I don't mind destroying a priceless comic for that. No worries.
Well, it's Superman Family, so it's not exactly priceless.
Yeah. A beat-up copy. To round out the last couple stuff, again, I'm on a Supergirl thing. I picked up a Supergirl paper doll book from 1984 movie. It's uncut. Don't be judging.
I always judge.
Well, I'm not talking to you. There is a set of cards coming out called Americana. I don't know if you've heard about these because they run like $150 a pack. And inside them, you get different things. You might have an autograph from, an artist, or not an artist, but like a politician. They might have taken, this is a chair that Abraham Lincoln actually sat on, and the chair might be a piece that's so badly damaged. So they cut it up into little things. They put a sliver of it on a card and they sell it. You might be getting an actual artifact from, history. And at, you know, you're basically at $150 a pack, you're almost guaranteed you're going to get something so outrageously cool that you can blow it on eBay. Or you're going to get something kind of lame, like Mark McClure's private signings autograph. Mark McClane is the actor who played Jimmy Olsen in all three Superman. Superman 2, Superman 3, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, something. Supergirl. And he also, I believe, didn't he appear in Smallville? Or was it Lois and Clark? Anyways.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't watch either of those.
I didn't. But you have his autograph. I have a card signed by Helen Hunt. No, that's not right. Helen Slater. You know, again, part of this series. So the reason I mention this is because I just saw online Marvel's coming out with a new set of trading cards that is $200 a pack.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And inside the card, you're guaranteed one sketch from a current Marvel artist. You might get a covers card where they've taken a copy of Fantastic Four number one and cut it up into little pieces. You might be getting a new Sketch-O-Fear 3D card, which will be very rare. You'll get a regular card, of which there's 99 of them. You know, so they're taking this idea that Americana did, and they're putting it to a really, really high-end collectible. And again, I will post a link to it on our Facebook page. And if you feel like going for it, I mean, $200 a pack, I'd hate to see what a box would cost. The last couple items I bought from the Comic-Con, San Diego Comic Book Con, a book I've raved about, Love and Capes. They had an exclusive comic book that you could only buy from the creator at the con. Guys have it online for 30 to 70 bucks, depending if it's slab. I found one for 99 cents.
Ooh.
I picked up a Supergirl personal sketch card from Bill Galvin. These were a bunch done for the March of Dimes. I admit it, man. You put a sketch or a silent auction for charity, I go mad. And the last thing I picked up right before I left was an adapter for an iPad Nano, which I could plug into my tape cassette for like $3, or buy one for $25 at Walmart or Best Buy, whatever. So that's, you know, on eBay. And like I said, that's just the stuff I've won. I mean, there's things that I bid for that I just never get. Case in point, I just bid on an Action Comics 252, which was in good shape. That, in case you didn't know, is the first appearance of Supergirl. Dummy Joe had one at one time and sold it eons ago. I 70 bucks on it. Right now it's going for 160, you know, and it could conceivably go as high as 300. I don't know if do you remember Gary Anderson's TV show, UFO?
I never saw it. I've heard about those shows, and I know that people like them. They weren't shown locally when I was a kid. And yeah, I think you don't watch them when you're seven, you just watch them and go, this is really painfully horrible.
Well, I'll tell you, these shows were actually not bad. If you get past the cheesy 1970 special effects, there was actually some thought put on these. Because the good guys didn't always win. And again, I bought a cheap set off deep discount DVD. And with the same fear you had, like, is this as good as I think it was? And with the same trepidation I did going to my $6 Million Man DVDs, I actually watched UFO. It's not bad. And again, if you want, I'll borrow you the set. There was only two seasons worth. And one of the key pieces of it, on the moon base, they had the UFO Interceptor, which was a single ship space that shot this humongous missile at the incoming UFO. And their aim had to be precise, because once you shot this missile, that's all you had. You had to return to base. Dinky, which was a toy company, a 1960s toy company in the 70s made a replica of this. They also did Space 1999. They had the Enterprise. You could shoot little things out of it. And I've been after these for ages. Box a refurbished one, and I would have to go buy the missile piece. And you know, I just want it for a showpiece on my shelf. And so far, I'm winning it. Most of them tend to be in Britain, because that's where Dinky sold most of their toys. And a new one runs $400 or $500, mint in the box, if you're lucky enough to find such a specimen. Used ones, I've lost out anywhere from 70 to 100 bucks. I don't refurbish, so I don't want to buy a beat up one. But again, you know, I got one going. Let's see, 99 pounds is $1.58. But I still got 8 days to go, so it's anybody's ball game. Ah, eBay, I am your bitch.
Believe it or not, kids, this here show has a sponsor.
eBay?
No.
Action Comics number 252?
You've been giving out plugs for free.
And this one is a plug that's not for free. This is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the web host of this here podcast. If you go to DreamHost.com. Nothing without a web page?
You need it.
Is that what you were going to say? And they have yet to give us a cease and desist. So they have yet to tell us that if you don't have a web page through DreamHost, you will die a horrible death while screaming.
Yep. It'll probably be when you fart in a smart car.
DreamHost.com. Head over there, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, and you get $20 off your first year. Get unlimited bandwidth, unlimited uploads, bajillions of email addresses, everything you need for a web page. And then you can buy ads from us because we are selling advertising. We have very reasonable rates. I actually went out and looked, and our rates are much lower than are recommended. So,
we're desperate.
Email me at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. If you would like to give us feedback, we have a crazy Gmail address, but I don't think Joe has the password for it anymore, which is why people are emailing me.
I have it stored somewhere.
Okay. But believe it or not, you can call us. Give us a call at 952-856-0519, and we may play your call on this here podcast. We also have a Facebook page, which Joe has mentioned, Crazy Comics and Stuff, because Joe doesn't understand the title of the show. Over at Facebook, you can friend us. You can send us messages. You can do all sorts of things. We are easy to get a hold of. This here podcast is just kind of something we do. The reason it's called Crazy Comics and Stories is because we talk comics. We have tons of stories. And because I stole the title from Walt Disney's Comics and Stories.
Corey?
Yes.
I got to take a killer dump. Can we break here and I'll be back in a bit?
You realize, of course, nobody really cares about the fact that you need to go to the bathroom, even if that is where you read your comics.
Just close it. I gotta go. I'll see you in a bit. Oh, dear Lord. I can't go yet. I need something to read. Something to read. Ah, oh, Nice to Dinner Table. Reddit. Godzilla Half-War. Reddit. Thor. Oh, it's a crossover. Ah, oh, Comic Buyer's Guide. Oh, Irrelevance and Palooza. Woohoo! I'm out of here.
Well, kids, believe it or not, you've listened to us blather on about comics for quite a while. And we blathered on for a little over 3 hours. So we're cutting this here episode in half. That's right. Another to be continued. Frighteningly enough. So remember, kids, as we say every week, that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about